Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home.
For the musician who ain't got time to take a fast train, well, you better read the airline's instrument policy. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Ahead today, a revealing new study on airlines' musical instrument rules. And later, live music from post-rock pianist Rachel Grimes and the duo On Fillmore. But to begin, Greg Beavers, a cellist in the Kiara String Quartet, was distressed when he couldn't get through United Airlines security at Denver International Airport to catch a plane to New York recently. The reason? His cello was too big. With stepped-up security at airports since 9/11, traveling musicians are increasingly nervous about whether they'll be allowed to board with their most prized possessions. In a moment, we'll look at a revealing new survey on the topic, but first, joining us on the line is cellist Greg Beavers. Hey, Greg.
Hi. Thanks for having me, John.
So you had a seat assignment for your cello. This is not uncommon, right? Cellists are used to having to buy a seat for their instrument.
That's right. The cello is generally too big to fit into the overhead compartment on aircrafts, with very few exceptions. And so to avoid having to check it, I buy a seat every time the Kiara String Quartet, which I'm a member of, every time we fly.
Okay, so you show up, you attempt to board the plane, you've got your seat assignment for the cello, and what happens?
Well, this actually was after we'd gone through security. We were at the gate. I was traveling with my wife and 11-month-old daughter. And right as they started boarding the aircraft, we were informed that the cello could only go into first class and must have a first-class ticket purchased. And
had you ever heard this before?
Actually, yes, I have. It happens occasionally on United Airlines. Every airline has different rules, but in this case, the aircraft was a 757, and United has interpreted the FAA rules to mean that the cello can only go in two seats on the aircraft, 1A and 1D, and those are first-class seats.
Hmm. Now, what if those seats are sold? You know, what if they're taken?
Well, it's up to the flight attendant to decide what to do. This flight attendant decided that I had to either buy a first-class ticket or they would move me onto a flight on a different aircraft, which is what ended up happening.
And what is the difference? I mean, how does that make a difference, moving you to another air? So, first of all, let me make this clear. You're traveling with your wife and your daughter. Your wife is Julie Yoon, who's the violinist in the Kiara Quartet. So they're allowed on the plane. They can take off and head back home. What did you end up doing? Why did changing planes make a difference? You still had the cello.
Yes. The difference was that the later flight was an Airbus A320, which for some reason United has decided is different and does not need to have the cello in the first class. So it could go in coach. And you know, this kind of thing happens all the time. You'd be hard-pressed to find a musician, cellist, violinist, violist, or whatever, who hasn't got a horror story for traveling. And it's not just United Airlines, it's every airline.
Although, as we'll hear when we check into this survey done by the Strad magazine, there are some airlines that fare better than others and a few that do not fare well at all in musicians' eyes. Could you have checked the cello? Is that possible?
It is possible, but let's see. After I got back to New York, I went in to get my cello looked at, as I like to do with the master repair people who are in New York. And I was telling my repair person about what had happened, and she said, "Oh, a lot of my business is from people who try to check their instruments, you know, $20,000 sound post cracks, things of that nature." And so the fact that my instrument is 300 years old and, you know, is not exactly in Walmart next to sporting goods, it's kind of hard to replace.
Right. So the general thing that you do is to buy a seat for the cello.
Yes.
I mean, you know, we're hearing a lot. People who are not musicians have all these new fees to deal with and stuff. There's a lot of airlines now charging for people who check their baggage and stuff. I mean, I suppose you could make a case for the airline saying, you know, why should we allow these big instruments into what is already a very crowded cabin?
That's a very good point. Unfortunately, it doesn't hold water just because the instruments that do go into fit into the overhead bin, violins, violas, oboes, flutes, etc., these are all much smaller than the typical carry-on bag that is allowed to fit into the overhead bin. And cellos, well, I purchase a seat. I don't see how you can complain about that one.
Yeah.
That's a significant expense. So, there are problems. But this is also not a new problem. I mean, I've been traveling for almost 20 years with my instrument, and it hasn't changed at all in that time period.
We're speaking with Greg Beaver. He is the cellist of the Chiara String Quartet. And musicians, does Greg's experience resonate with you? Have you had a particularly good or bad experience flying with a musical instrument? What do you do? How do you prepare? Tell us about it. You can leave a comment on the WNYC website on the soundcheck page. That's wnyc.org/soundcheck. Or you can call us at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And joining us on the line now from London is Peter Summerford, a news editor at The Strad, which is a magazine for string players and their fans. Peter, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hello.
How common is Greg's experience? He's done everything right. He's bought the seat, the ticket for the cello. It has its own seat. He's still denied entry to the airplane.
Well, I think his specific experience maybe isn't as common as you'd expect, but I know that cellists do have particular problems. And the thing, what's so frustrating for the musician is it's not just the inconsistency between different airlines' policies, it's the inconsistency of their application. I mean, it all depends on who you come face-to-face with that day when you fly. It's how well they know the policy, how they interpret the rules, how many musicians they see, how many cellos they're used to. All these things come into it. And a lot of the problems that cellists have is if there's a change in the plane, they no longer have the bulkhead seat that they were required to have. And I know some airlines make a whole song and dance of fixing up your cello in your seat for you. All cellists want is you know they show their two tickets, they ask for a seatbelt extender, and it should be as simple as that, but it often isn't.
Greg, the idea of, you know, as Peter says, it varies from airline to airline, but often from airline employee to another airline employee. What do you do? Do you show up at an airport with a copy of the airline's instrument policy so that you can say, look, it says right here I can do this?
Honestly, having tried that, that's the worst thing you could do. Because as soon as you start pulling out the rules, that's when they're going to label you a problem passenger. And we've actually had cases where that's backfired. What I do is I play dumb. But actually, speaking of inconsistent application, there was a cellist who got off of the airplane that they wouldn't let me board, whose cello was not in first class. So there's your example right there.
So wait a minute. On the same flight that you were denied boarding and told you had to buy a first class seat, someone else had already gotten on with their cello and was sitting in coach with
them. Flight, but the same aircraft. In other words, the aircraft that had just landed from New York was the one they were going to send back to New York.
Right.
And someone got off of that flight from New York to Denver, and on the same aircraft which was going to return from Denver to New York, I was not allowed to board.
Okay.
So it's kind of funny.
Now we reported in January on Soundcheck that the AFM, the American Federation of Musicians, was actually working on legislation to combat this sort of thing by standardizing policies across the industry. Let me ask you both, Greg, would that work for you? And Peter, is that really what musicians at the end of the day are looking for? Greg, you first.
If it is applied as the language says in the Senate bill, it would be the most wonderful thing ever because it allows violins, guitars, it specifically mentions violin and guitar to be put into the overhead bin without fees, and even mentions larger instruments can be taken in the cabin without charge. And it mentions a seat. It seems to strike the bulkhead requirement. It has some specific things about not obscuring an exit sign, not being in an emergency exit. That would open up all of the window seats to cellos and would be wonderful.
Peter?
Well, I think for violinists and violists too, it's pretty much the Holy Grail. And I know in Europe they're campaigning for the same kind of policies, for a consistency between the airlines on hand luggage, consistency between airports too, because sometimes a musician may take a instrument as hand luggage in one airport, but they can't take it back from a different airport. So you've got all these things that should be changed.
Greg, do you have any idea where that legislation stands? It's in the Senate now, right?
As I understand it, and again, I'm not a lawyer or a politician, so this is what I've heard secondhand. As I understand it, the Senate bill has passed, and the House has passed similar legislation that does not contain the musical instrument language. And so, as we remember from the health care bill, a lot of changes can be made to legislation in conference. And one of those changes we're hoping for is that the Senate language will be the ultimately adopted language in this FAA Reauthorization Act.
So at
this
least
is S-1451, in case anyone's keeping score.
Okay. So at least, Greg, the next time you show up with your cello at an airport, you will know what to expect, and the people at the airline will know what is expected of them as well. That's, as Peter says, that's the Holy Grail. Is that it?
Yes. I mean, federal legislation trumps anything, so that would be the Holy Grail.
As long as
it's actually applied. You know, the rule of law has to apply, and then it would be okay.
Greg Beaver is cellist from the Chiara String Quartet. Greg, thanks very much for sharing your tale of woe with us on Soundcheck today. Peter, stay with us. We want to talk about the survey that you did at the Strad, looking at the different airlines. Back in 2008, you want to talk about a horror story. Canadian musician Dave Carroll and his band flew United Airlines to Nebraska to begin a tour, and as they waited for takeoff, they noticed the baggage handlers outside the plane recklessly flinging their instruments around. And after his $3,500 Taylor guitar had been severely damaged, and after months of complaining to no avail, Dave Carroll took revenge in the form of this viral video called United Breaks Guitars. Mike Taylor had been the victim of a vicious act of malice at old hair. So began a year-long saga of pass the buck, don't ask me, and I'm sorry, sir, your claim can go nowhere. So do all the airlines people from New York to New Delhi, including kind. Okay, in a moment. Which are the best and worst airlines to fly if you're flying with an instrument? We'll check in on the Strad survey. And later, is it rock or is it something less easily named? This band, On Fillmore, joins us. So does pianist Rachel Grimes to play live in the studio. And speaking of playing live, I hope you'll join Soundcheck in the Green Space next Thursday for a live performance with the cast and the band from the Broadway musical Fela. That's Thursday the 22nd at 2 p.m. For tickets, go to wnyc.org/thegreenspace. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. With music festivals dotting the summer landscape, we're entering the peak travel season for musicians, but airline carry-on rules have angered many violin players, violists, cellists, bassists, guitarists, what have you. Peter Summerford is with us on the line, news editor at The Strad Magazine, the magazine for violinists and cellists and whatnot. We also want to hear from you. Have you had a particularly bad or particularly good experience flying with an instrument? Tell us about it at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692, or leave a comment at wnyc.org/soundcheck. Peter, in the Strad survey, you polled about 100 readers, all of them musicians, to see which airlines were the best and which were the worst. There was a tie for best airline, Southwest and Lufthansa. What makes them the best airlines for a musician?
Well, I think Lufthansa had a very positive attitude. They were very professional. Southwest, they were praised for being really flexible, being friendly, having a good sense of humor. And one tour manager said that Southwest are always willing to help solve problems rather than create them. And another reason was because they only use Boeing 737s. Musicians know where they stand on baggage space.
Mm.
And I think it was the little things as well that impressed people, such as cellists who are allowed to pre-board, which means it's obviously much easier taking a cello down an aisle when there's no one else on the plane,
right,
rather than taking it down there when it's full.
Okay, so kudos to Southwest and Lufthansa. Booze for Ryanair. The cheap way to fly is, I guess, you get what you pay for, don't you?
Exactly. Well, Ryanair is Europe's biggest low-cost carrier. It's terribly popular. It's very, very cheap. But musicians' main problem with that airline is that it forces violinists and violists to buy a seat for their instrument if they want to take it on board. Even though, of course, you can take it. It's small enough to put up in the overhead bin. And that issue is a real focus of a pretty big Facebook campaign at the moment. There's a Musicians Against Ryanair campaign going on with about 15,000 members. But then again, it has to be said, because it's so cheap, we had the most readers fly with that airline.
So they'll complain till the end of the day about it, but then they'll get right on another Ryanair flight. Now, Ryanair, I mean, does it cost the same to buy a seat for your instrument? And I guess I'll ask this about any airline. Does it cost the same to buy a seat for your instrument as it does to buy a seat for yourself?
I believe so, yeah.
All right, so it really, at what point then is Ryanair not very cost effective if you're having to pay twice to get where you're going?
Well, it's like a lot of these low-cost airlines. If you book really well ahead, you can get very, very, very low fares. So I suppose if you compare it to the more medium-cost airlines, then even buying two tickets could end up cheaper.
Mm.
But if that's okay, if you're just one musician, what about if you're a quartet or a chamber orchestra? It does make it very punitive then, I think.
Yeah. We're speaking with Peter Summerford, the news editor at the Strad magazine, which did this survey of musicians about which airlines they like to fly on and which they hate to fly on and which they fly on anyway because they're cheap. Let's see what some of our Soundcheck listeners have to say. Joanne is joining us from Brooklyn Heights. Joanne is a jazz booking agent, so Joanne, you must have a lot of experience with maybe not cellos, but I'm sure double basses, right?
Absolutely. I've been in the business for about 30 years, and I've represented several bassists, and one in particular right now who's traveling is Ron Carter, the jazz mm-hmm. bassist. And for years we've had this trouble with bass, carrying the double bass on the plane, just like the cellists are having right now. We used to have to buy seats. Now they don't allow us to do that. We have to put the bass under the plane in a hard shell case, which is very risky, as you know, that you can risk having a serious damage to the instrument. So Ron was always very afraid to go and take a bass borrow a bass while on tour. But now it's just become routine. Everywhere we go, we have to get a bass in the city where he's working so that he can play on it, because it's too difficult to go through the airports with all the security and all of that. It's just too much. And the cost of the overweight is extreme. So this is what's happening.
Well, let me read you a comment from Chris in Brooklyn, who writes, as a double bassist, my overweight fees have gone up over the years to $300 plus, yet golf clubs and skis are exempt. Meanwhile, I'm forced to play foreign, often substandard instruments on the road. Sounds like that's exactly what you're dealing with Ron Carter.
Exactly. And, you know, he used to hold out. He would never want to play another person's bass, but now he just has to do it.
Well, now, but pianists have had to do that forever. You don't travel
True
with
enough.
A piano. You have to, and I'm sure a lot of your pianists, you know, they show up at the club and they deal with whatever 88 keys are put in front of them.
Well, that's true, and because Ron is well known, there are several people who live in these big cities or not so big cities who really would love for him to play their bass. So he gets at least a good choice of instruments, but it's not always great.
All right, Joanne, thanks for the call. We're going to stay in Brooklyn. Mika joining us on the line, and Mika plays the guitar. What's your experience been flying with that instrument?
Well, I usually try to play dumb like the other person had mentioned, and I would take my guitar in a soft case and hide it behind my back as I would board the plane. But now they're getting really, you know, fly with noticing my hiding technique.
When you say a soft case, you mean just like a shapeless, like a duffel bag kind of thing?
It's like a guitar case that's like a backpack kind of.
Mm-hmm.
So
but it's still obvious that you're carrying a guitar, though.
Yeah, but it's still so slim, and, you know, there's always plenty of space in the overhead or in the closet. They always say there isn't, but I always find space.
Mm-hmm.
But the last time we played in San Francisco about a month ago, I got in a huge fight with the flight attendant who wouldn't let me take it on, and she was watching me, and she said, "You have to put it under there," and we have also a vintage synthesizer. And, you know, that was definitely the size of a normal carry-on, and it's a little square case. But nonetheless, she made us put it under the plane, but they assured us they're going to carefully take it under, like somebody will walk it down there. And I was watching through the window, like where people drop off their strollers and pick up their strollers, and watch them throw all of our stuff on the runway, and then like even threw a stroller on top of the guitar. I was like freaking out, like, oh my God.
How was everything?
Well, I mean, luckily the guitar is pretty tough, but our synthesizer, the electronics, did get messed up, and we had to send it for repair, which is really, really annoying, because there's no, you know, once you have a vintage instrument like that,
yeah,
and it gets messed up, then, you know, the repairs are just, it's really difficult
well,
to do.
Tell a violinist or a cellist who owns a Strad about the horror stories of vintage instruments. There are some comments coming in on the line as well, so let's head quickly into the control room and producer Joel Meyer with some of them. Joel?
John, the Soundcheck phone lines have been filled with double bassists this afternoon with a lot of stories to tell. But I did want to point out this comment on the page that is a positive experience flying on an airline recently. Gene from New York City writes, "I just flew Continental from New York to Louisville, Kentucky. The overheads were too short lengthwise for my small-cased tenor sax, so they put it, along with another traveler's sax, in their little closet. No trouble at all going or returning, though I noticed many people with slightly oversized carry-ons had to part with them." And Dale from Brooklyn asks an interesting question. He writes, "As an occasional performance artist, I've started shipping my costume. Seems like it would be better to just ship an instrument because it's in a box, padded to your specifications, and most importantly, insured. So what about shipping?"
All right, Peter, is that a possible answer? Can you ship a Stradivarius or a Guarneri?
It depends on your insurance company. And sometimes it can be the most cost-effective way. I know bassists who are contracted to play at a festival overseas. Sometimes that is the only way. Some airlines are very restrictive on shipping bases, and it is safer than trusting it to the hold of a normal aircraft. Sometimes the base is the last thing you want damaged.
Right. So, but insurance only does so much, right? I mean, if you're talking about a Stradivarius, that's, you know, some of these instruments are worth seven figures. How do you, just the fact that you have insurance doesn't actually cover the sort of psychic and musical cost if the instrument is damaged really seriously.
Yes, well, and I think the other point is that a lot of these instruments are loaned to players,
mm-hmm,
from foundations and quite wealthy owners, and sometimes their contracts with the players stipulate that they have to keep the instrument with them as much as possible,
yeah,
at all times.
Yeah.
So a musician obviously often feels, you know, the only way they're going to feel secure is to have the instrument sitting next to them in the plane.
Which, you know, if I were traveling with an instrument, I think would probably make me feel best as well. It's not just classical string players who have to deal with this. Howie is joining us on the line here in Manhattan. Howie, you used to manage James Brown's, his band and their tours?
I did for 3.5 years in the early 2000s, mid-2000s. And I was actually having this conversation, this very conversation with somebody this morning, so it's kind of ironic that you're talking about this topic. I used to have to move 11 band members, all of their instruments, their uniforms, their shoes, three singers, and backup singers, and two dancers, and an MC, his MC, Danny Ray, who used to carry 32 sets of uniforms for members that have been dead for at least 10 years.
All right, so it sounds like instruments were the least of your worries then.
Yeah, I just couldn't. We would have just the left shoe and not the right shoe, and I couldn't convince them even after post 9/11 that we just couldn't be carrying uniforms for members who didn't have tickets who'd been dead for decades, and I could never convince them to do that. We just used to pay thousands and thousands of dollars. And this was before the airlines added all these fees just to carry all these uniforms around for dead people.
And what about the instruments? I mean, saxes, would they go in the overhead bin? What did you do with the electric guitars and the basses, et cetera?
We would case them up, as a manager, what I would try to do is cut a deal with the airline when you could still do that before a couple of years ago to just give me a one bulk rate for all the instruments. But as that young lady said before, I'd sit there and watch in horror as they were tossed around. You know, like basketballs.
Yeah. All right. Well, Tales from the Trenches. Thanks, Howie, joining us on the line here in New York. We're still speaking with Peter Summerford as well from the Strad magazine. Let's come back to that survey you did, Peter. What are musicians mostly looking for when it comes to choosing an airline to fly with?
I think they're looking for a consistent policy that, you know, everyone knows the rules and will apply them. They're looking for security. They're looking for a good attitude, a friendly approach.
Is it easy to find out what an airline's policy is regarding instruments?
In most cases, it is. It is now. They are getting better at putting their policies online, although sometimes they are difficult to find. It's often the case that sports equipment policies are much clearer and easier to find than musical instrument policies.
And so, golf clubs and skis, as one of our commenters said, you know, they seem to have no trouble getting those things on board, but try and get a guitar or a cello. And really, at the end of the day, Peter, what do you tell musicians is their best, you know, their best hope of getting where they need to get with a minimum of fuss?
Well, definitely check the airline's policy and check out things like the seating of your plane, where you're going to be flying. Allow extra time, because always there might be points where you're going to have to negotiate with people or things. People are going to have to check the policy with their colleagues. I think if you're going to be shipping or trying to get an instrument from one place to another over multiple journeys, use a travel agent. There are specialist musical travel agents out there who can help you. And the other thing, if you have checked an instrument into the hold, make sure you inspect it really carefully for damage as soon as you get to your
immediately,
destination.
Yes. As Dave Carroll learned to his chagrin before writing that song, United Breaks Guitars, that we heard earlier. Peter
exactly.
Summerford is the news editor at the Strad magazine in London. Peter, thanks very much for being with us on the show today.
Thank you.
Another possible idea in a guest column for the Strad, Norman Lebrecht, our old friend, notes how musicians like this cellist, Stephen Isserlis, simply try to fly less, doing residencies, which means more time in fewer places. And here is Stephen Isserlis in action. Ah, that was beautifully timed on my part. Not Stephen Isserlis, but his accompanist that you're getting to hear in the background. There he is. So that's what's happening in the world of string instrument. Last week, Wilco's guitarist Nels Klein came to soundcheck with a side project. Now it is the band's drummer's turn. Still to come, Wilco's Glenn Cochi and bassist Darren Gray are the band on Fillmore. They will join us to play live. So too will the pianist and composer Rachel Grimes as we continue with soundcheck.